welcome to another edition of No Filter Sports. We are recording the show on Monday, September 14th, 2020. Eli Zarrett here, Bob Page, and Denny McClain, of course. And, you know, we should start with the Lions, who started the season. You know, I was going to say this. Let me just start with this. In a world gone mad, with so much shoved in our faces every day, 200,000 Americans dead from the pandemic, racial unrest roiling both sides of the political spectrum, it was a momentary return to the world as you remember it. The Lions blowing a 17-point fourth-quarter lead with an ending as mind-boggling and head-banging as any they've ever served us or served up.
You're right, Eli. Isn't it wonderful to know that, as just as you said, in this horrible world, some things at least are the same. Yes. Some things haven't changed. It's so heartening.
It is.
Well, the coach kind of messed this game up. He had this game won. All he had to do is run the ball in the fourth quarter when they had the ball the last time, and they were just before the last time. And you know what? The single most important thing when I played football in high school, the coach used to tell us, my first priority is running the clock, because if we're ahead, we're going to kill them in the fourth quarter. And that's what he did not do. He did not manage his clock. I don't know why he didn't. He's supposed to be a Belichick pawn. He's supposed to be one of those guys that understands it. But, man, I'm going to tell you, I was shocked. And, of course, my great quarterback in Chicago, to whatever the hell his name is, the Polish guy.
Oh, come on, Denny. You love to beat up Mitchell Trubisky. No, you're faking it, Denny. You know what his name is. Say the name.
Okay. I never beat him up. Not when he wins. So, you know, I'm a front runner with this NFL. So, he was, you never saw so many high passes from both quarterbacks the first couple of quarters, right? I mean, one after another, everybody was high. So that's got a lot to do with nerves. It's got a lot to do with no good spring training, no regimentation of serious thought, and not playing anybody to find out who could do what and what when they can do it.
Yeah, I agree, but Stafford's a veteran, and the interception he threw
doesn't make any difference.
He forces the ball into a crowd, and Fuller intercepted it. That led to Trubisky's amazing 27-yard strike to Anthony Miller with 1:54 left.
Don't steal my thunder, Eli.
Go ahead.
I want you guys to know this. The Lions could have won that game on Sunday. And when you think about it, they should have won that game. And they would have won that game on Sunday if only their best linebacker, Jamie Collins, hadn't somehow gotten himself thrown out of the game in the first half for bumping a ref. If only Matthew Stafford hadn't thrown that 3rd-and-6 interception just prior to the 2-minute warning in the fourth quarter. And if only, with 6 seconds left, rookie DeAndre Swift hadn't dropped the winning 16-yard pass in the end zone. Open, it popped out of his hands. And you know, as I was laughing at that play, Eli, you're going to relate to this. First name you won't, the second name you will, because we knew him and we covered him. The kid's wearing number 32. When I was a boy, that was Kenny Webb, the Lions fullback, but it was Rick Cain out of San Jose.
You have never forgotten what I said to you. I said, I call him the big mistake.
That's right.
Back. You're still laughing about it.
You've invented so many great phrases over the many years, is also one of your greatest, our big mistake running back. And here's this kid drop. It was hysterical.
Well, it wasn't hysterical. It was tragic.
And it's hysterical to me.
Here's how it sounded. Let's listen.
11 seconds to go. Stafford downfield, and his pass is dropped by Swift. He was in the end zone.
Now, a moment after that, as the play was still, you know, the aftermath, Jonathan Vilma, doing his color commentary, his first ever game, just goes, wow, just wow. But listen, that's a pass this kid has caught 10,000 times in his career. He's a great player, played at Georgia, you know, second-round pick. It's just inexplicable,
it's always something.
Don't get angry and don't get vindictive and all that, because you're so furious because you're such a boyhood Lions fan, and they don't tear your heart out. You say you were laughing at it, so either you're laughing or you're angry. Which one is it? Are you both?
Are you kidding me? You ask me that question?
Well,
after all our years of friendship?
You're laughing.
I'm not angry. I was laughing my ass off. My game is Monday night. My game is the New York Giants playing the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's just Denny's game was yesterday. The Chicago Bears playing the NFLs. Denny, somebody tweeted me this morning, and they said, well, I bet Denny's a happy camper now. And I said, you know what? I don't know. I got to ask him. Denny's only going to be a happy camper depending upon whether he bet the right team Sunday. Did you bet on your beloved Bears to win?
We bet the right team, no question about it.
You're a smart man.
But I will tell you this. I forget what, somewhere in the third quarter, I made the statement. We were watching the game, and I said, if we don't score here or get close to scoring here, I'm going, let's go back to work. So next thing I know, they start to move down the field, and then they just had me for the rest of the game.
But I've seen,
listen, one of the greatest moments I saw yesterday. Everybody was concerned he wasn't the player that he once was. Nobody is as they grow older. But Adrian Peterson looked like a superstar again.
He looked quick. Yep. He looked outstanding for 35 years old. Well,
that portends, Eli. You guys are right. I guess he did look really good. Yeah. So now the FLs next Sunday have to go to Green Bay and take on a Packers team, which destroyed the Vikings because Aaron Rodgers was so great as he usually is. Who will be the Lions' big mistake player in this loss coming up Sunday? Probably Adrian Peterson.
Let me just say one more thing about the drop pass by Swift. We've seen a lot of drops. They happen all the time. But this one was right in front of his face. He had his hands right there. He watched the ball into his hands. It appeared to be caught. And then as he turned, he didn't turn too soon. He just bobbled it and dropped it. It's about as inexplicable a miss or a drop.
Did you watch the whole game?
Yes, I did. I watched every play.
They lost the game for one reason. Okay, all these other things you've talked about, sure, eventually they lost because of that too. But the bottom line was, if he manages the clock right, the Bears don't have any more timeouts when they get the ball. It's over with. The game's done.
Yeah. Okay, Danny, so that leads, that's a great segue, and it leads me to this, and I want your opinions on this. As the Sheila Hemp Ford era is officially underway, I don't think there's any way Matt Patricia lasts the year. Just one game, a few of you say, then you don't know much about the Detroit Lions.
I don't know about
And now you think Sheila, think that. About this, Sheila obviously is going to have a big role in picking the FL's next latest head coach following the FL's traditional plan to fail. As Joe Falls once wrote, it's the, hey, let's give the guy a chance philosophy. Do you guys think Patricia's gone this year? Where do you think the FLs might turn?
You mean the whole season, or it's going to get cut in the middle of the season?
Do they fire him during the season?
I don't think so.
I think they're improved, frankly.
Yeah, well, I think so too.
And he is the Vegas favorite.
Blame it on nerves. You can blame it on the first game of the season and adrenaline flow. I mean, you can blame it because everybody was sky high right up through the second period. I mean, they're jumping up and down. They're doing their shtick. And
I
believe this was just a first game, and they will be better.
Know better than that, Denny. Okay. You followed the Detroit Lions for 100
years. Let's not feed. I don't want to feed Bob anymore. Bob, I understand.
I don't want to feed him to get in the playoffs. Remember?
Eli,
since I mentioned Joe Falls, you know, how about the Detroit media coverage of this game? Carlos Monterez writing in the Detroit Free Press, and I quote, "The Lions meltdown want to punch my laptop." Wojo, who should really know better, of the Detroit News tweeted, quote, "A tough one for your Lions." Where's the hard-hitting coverage in the wake of this latest nonsense? You know, Joe Falls, Jerry Green, Ackerman, those guys were the legends of Detroit. The Lions never would have gotten away with this on Sunday if they had a tough media, or Drew Sharp, if you want, from the modern era, if they had tough media in Detroit.
Well, you know, what you're doing now, and I understand, this is you're taking the last 60 years, and you're saying it's like a swollen, sore, infected boil, and you touch it and it's pain. So that's what it is. You're putting the 63 years that this loss is so egregious and so indicative of how
it's
awful
so
they
typical.
Are that we should all be railing to indicative. Fire the coach right now.
Yeah.
That is what you're saying.
I didn't say that at all. You don't listen to me. God damn it. I said, I don't believe that he lasts the year. Danny disagrees.
No,
and he may be right.
You're saying that the media should be calling for his head.
The media should be tough. Not that they should be calling for him to be fired after one game. Okay. That guy's a heck of a football coach, and he proved it under Belichick in New England. I'm not saying Matt Patricia can't coach. All I'm saying is the way the Detroit Lions are, I think he's not going to last the season. I may be wrong. I don't know.
Well, we don't know.
Detroit media, Detroit media wrong. Back in the 60s, 70s, it was a tough media. It isn't anymore. It's a pablum.
Yep.
They don't jump on anybody. Look at our play-by-play guys. They boots the ball, throws the ball away. Oh, boy, he just threw it a little wide.
There's no doubt about that. Even with Jerry Green and Joe Falls, it was still overall a soft media. There's been a couple of guys over the years that would stand out.
Well, Falls and Dave
Dials or an Al Ackerman.
Yeah, but Falls and Waldmeyer were vicious at times.
Yeah, but that they.
But Pete didn't write sports. Were liars. Pete stopped writing sports a long time ago. He wrote it in your era, and he was vicious. Yeah. But then he became a general columnist for the Detroit News.
Guys, I would like to harken back. By the way, the last thing I want to say was that when they were down 17, the Bears, that is in the fourth quarter, Dick Stockton said after Trubisky was thrown for a 27-yard sack fumble, he goes, "The Bears bench is looking demoralized." After the fumble, and he said, look at the body language, and the body language changed quickly. But I want to go back, as the world is such a mess, as I said at the top, you know, 52 years ago on this day, the world was a mess too. We had a tumultuous time, RFK, MLK, Martin Luther King, both assassinated in 68, the riots in Chicago, protests about the Vietnam War, riots in cities here in Detroit, the us versus them, silent majority, my country, right or wrong versus the immortal war. But you know, on September 14th, this day, 52 years ago, there was also this.
Well, this is the big day for the maestro, Denny McLean. Saturday afternoon at Tiger Stadium, September the 14th, 1968, and Denny will be going for win number 30. Here's the set by Segui, the pitch. Swung on, a drive for that. That'll be the ball game. It's over the head of Gosha as the Tigers come from behind, and McLean has his 30th victory of the 1968 season.
Back when there were fans in the stands, a sellout crowd, Tigers rallying around Denny. They're all rushing out to the plate as the winning run scored and the game was over. And the crowd in front of the dugout there with the media crush. I saw Jerry Green in there. There was we don't know who Doc Finkel is, Sandy Koufax interviewing. And then with Dizzy Dean over your shoulder, yep. You're going to listen to Dizzy Dean kind of not really saying much because you had said how the team came back so many times to save you. And then at the end, you're going to hear Jim Campbell.
That's not true.
Well, I didn't mean that. To how many games the Tigers pulled out in the ninth inning, whether you pitched or not.
That year.
That's what I meant. And then you'll hear at the end Jim Campbell saying, look over here, because in the crush was John Fetzer, the owner who wanted to congratulate you. Here's what it sounded like moments after that 30th win.
Oh, Sandy, it's the greatest bunch of ball players I've ever played with. And I've been saying that for 5 years. It's just been fantastic. We've been making clubs beat themselves. And exactly what happened again here today. Just that kind of a ball club.
They won the ball game for you a lot of times in that night.
Sure
behind,
sure
cover behind, the one back again.
Here's Mr. Fetzer right back.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, great job on the ball for you.
Thank you.
A great one. You better come to it.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
Proud of you.
Thank you.
He was proud of you. It was quite a day. So,
well, tell us about it, Denny.
Give us a little bit.
Eli's done all the talking.
Well, you know, the two things happened that day that I recall really well. There was an ABC crew in the clubhouse, and they were filming everything. I mean, all the other players, every time I would make a move, they would follow me no matter where I went. So I said, I'm going to the bathroom. Give me 5 minutes. I'll be back. So went into the bathroom, and there he is. I looked over my shoulder, and he's still filming. My God almighty. I said, what are you doing? He said, well, we're filming everything. I was told I have to fill everything. I said, get out of here. Please.
Denny, the question is, was it number one or number two?
Please, Bob. Please. And then the ball game was Reggie hit two home runs off me. The first time I had him 0-2, and I went dead set against my way I used to pitch. Normally, if I get a guy 0-2, I just throw one fastball after another because you never give a sucker a chance when you get him 0-2, 1-2. And the bottom line is I said, whoa, I'll fool the hell out of him. So I hung a curveball in his eyes and he hit it 4 miles. Well, So when he come up the next time, I'm saying to myself, well, I'll get him this time. You watch. He'll never think that that thing is coming again. And it was in the same damn place. And he hit it, and he hit it even further. He hit it over the roof, the second one. So, and Reggie still talks about it when I see him at the shows from time to time.
Well, Eli Zarrett was a freshman at the University of Michigan coming from Long Island. I was a senior at Grosse Pointe South High School. The Tigers were my heroes, and Denny McClain was one of my heroes. I was just shy of my 18th birthday on that day, and I'll never forget watching that full game on TV, K-Line and Denny hugging on the top step of the dugout. Yeah. Great photograph, which made the cover of Sports Illustrated. It was just a tremendous time in all of our lives if you were from Detroit. Now, I know what answer I'm going to get from Denny on these other ones on this date. He's going to say, really? I don't remember. What happened in 1966 to you on this date?
I don't know.
You beat the Minnesota Twins for your 19th victory of the season. You had a hell of a year in 66 as well.
Yeah.
And what happened on this date in 1971 to you after your glory days had faded?
Did I get suspended or traded?
You beat the mighty Cleveland Indians for your 10th victory of the year.
Really?
For the Washington Senators.
Yeah, yeah. That was a very long year, folks. That was
your last year.
Torture. That was terrorism.
Right. So 4 years, less than 4 years, 3.5 years after you won that game, Eddie Matthews said, see you later in Atlanta, and you walk out of the ballpark with nothing. It's so...
With nothing. Sad. No, they didn't even give me an airline ticket to get home. They later reimbursed me a couple of months later, but not even an airline ticket. So I took a cab, as a matter of fact. Pete Sark, remember Pete Sark from Flint, Michigan?
Flint, of course, broadcaster. Great guy. Up there. Great guy.
Yeah, great guy. And he wanted to take me to the airport. He said, but I want to wait till it's the fourth or fifth inning. I'll get my story done. I said, you think I just got released, Pete. You think I'm going to sit here for five innings now and watch you do your story? I said, you got to be out of your mind. And so I jumped in a cab and went to the airport and went home.
Well, let's talk a little bit about our Tigers coming up. And also there are some more NFL notes.
Well, there's a lot. I mean, Brady, for Christ's sake, made his debut. There's a lot of NFL stuff.
You're right. We'll talk about all of that after I tell you that Dr. Yaldo is doing what he's always done better than anybody. And that is performing life-changing procedures on your eyes that will give you the best vision of your life and without contacts that are so annoying, or glasses, or reading glasses also. Get rid of all of it. I did. I never reached for it. Sometimes instinctively, I go to push my glasses back. It's been 25 years since I wore glasses, but that's how they become ingrained upon you and how great it is really to be free of them. Custom LASIK for patients under 45, better than 20/20 without glasses or contacts. If you're over 45, listen to this. Ask Dr. Yaldo about multifocal lens exchange. You'll never need reading glasses again. Your far vision will be high def HD for life. Get a free evaluation. Find out which procedure will change your life in ways you can only imagine. Call 1-800-398-EYES. Go to YaldoEyeCenter.com and tell them No Filter Sports sent you for special discounts. Not only will you save $1,500 on your surgery, you bring in a friend and you'll save half on top of that. Hey, everybody knows about Lincoln's legacy of luxury cars. I love my Lincolns. I've had six in a row now. I get them all at Star Lincoln. Hoot McInerney Star Lincoln leads the field. In July alone, they got nearly 105 star reviews because they take care of their customers. It's all part of Lincoln's message, and nobody plays it better or performs it better than Star Lincoln. One person wrote, the entire team from sales, business manager to service is an example of premier customer service. Make an appointment to get a new car at 248-354-4900. Get first-class treatment with your own sales guy paying attention to only you by effortlessly or online at starlincoln.com. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Well, you want to go back to football? There were some marvelous moments, including some not so marvelous moments with social messaging that seems to be a little bit of a fatigue factor here. Is it too soon to get into this? I was just kind of taking.
Well, that's the game. That's the game I wanted to get into right off the top. Go ahead. Not for the social messaging thing. I want to talk about, again, the amazing brilliance of Bill Belichick. Mm-hmm. Don't you think that Bill thought to himself during Tom Brady's contract problems, you know, I love Tom. We won six Super Bowls, but he's 43. How can I ease him out of here and do it gracefully for everybody to save face?
You're not going to believe what I'm going to tell you.
Brady goes to Tampa. You saw the major egg he laid in his opening loss yesterday. And again, I asked this before rhetorically, how the hell does Bill Belichick wind up with Cam Newton? They managed the game beautifully, and Cam won his opening game for the Patriots. It's astounding. It's amazing.
Let me tell you about Brady. Brady had outlived his usefulness there and happiness there. They said for 2 years he's been moping in the clubhouse and was doing nobody any favors, and he wasn't the same Tom Brady. And a lot of the players with names, some of the named players, I have spoken out recently and said it was time for Tom to go. We don't miss him, and the clubhouse is a better place now. So
I haven't seen those quotes.
Well, I read the story this morning. So, you know, if you weren't sleeping all morning, you'd have read it.
Well, no, there was a lot of that. I mean, remember his personal trainer was barred from the clubhouse, and there were some other issues, and, you know, he and Belichick differing on certain things. They got rid of players that he wanted to keep. He didn't have any receivers. He didn't have good protection. So he, you know, as they struggled as a team, he struggled also. And that's just what happens. But yeah, it was time for him to go. Everyone knew that. And the fact is, as you're alluding, Bob, the fact that he got Cam Newton, well, there was, you know, worry about Cam. He had shoulder and foot problems, cost him two seasons, and it was taking a chance. But look what Belichick has done. He's completely altered the offense. Now he's got Cam as a 250-pound, you know, running back as well. They plan running plays, and he scored two touchdowns on the ground, and he looks really, really healthy and good. So I guess if you want to allude it to Bill Belichick's brilliance, I'll agree.
I will say this about Brady. He looked 43 years old yesterday.
Yeah. Well, he is. And Belichick knew this is what they do. Belichick moves on. Now, I want you to think about this. You look at two great, great New England players, Patrick Chung and Dante Hightower. They both opted out of the season. They're not playing this year because they're concerned about the COVID-19 thing. They must be pretty concerned about that. So they're going to take a year off, supposedly. Then they're going to try to come back. And Denny, you know this, in any of the four sports, that's a very hard thing to do. I watched, of course, the Jets game yesterday. Le'Veon Bell got hurt again, the same former Michigan State All-American who turned down $14 million to play for the Steelers, sat out a year, signed with the Jets. He is not been the same player with New York. True. Hard thing to do.
Can I go back just a moment here? Why are we burying Brady already? It's his first game.
We're not burying him.
New team.
Listen.
Well, you know,
it's the first game of the season.
Thank you.
You just
take
it for granted that people are going to make lots of mistakes.
Well, I'm gathering, Bob, you seem to be alluding, maybe I'm reading too far into it, that Brady's already proven it's not going to work in Tampa Bay. He's 43 years old, so write them off.
I didn't say that either, Eli.
No, I said I might have read into that, but I felt you dismissed it pretty quickly. And kind of the same thing with the Lions. I'm saying that's, you know, you're the only one, but it's hard to write off a team or a player after one game.
Unless they're the Detroit Lions, you're right.
That's what we tend to do here. Some of the quarterback play yesterday was amazing. So Lamar Jackson, the MVP, 20-25 as they route Cleveland. Baltimore does. Russell Wilson, 31-35. Seattle beats Atlanta. So there was some. And again, I don't know if you saw this last night. The game was on late. I didn't see it till this morning, but the play that cost the Cowboys a chance to send it to overtime against the Rams.
Yeah, believe that.
You know, it's so you got Jalen Ramsey, the cornerback, fighting Michael Gallup, who's the receiver. Their hands are all over each other. And then apparently a little perceptible push by Gallup, and they call it on him. But they're handling each other all the way downfield. And it's, again, impossible. When replay doesn't even help in many cases to say what's a foul, what isn't. I see it in basketball all the time. It's so annoying. There was a great block at the end of the Raptors Celtics game where Marcus Smart got blocked. I forget whose shot it was. Yeah. Blocked the ball to the backboard, but then his hand hit the Raptors guy's hand. That's not a foul. But Giannis just touches the back of so it's just so arbitrary.
It really is
consequences.
Yeah, you have to remember that as an official, the single hardest thing to do in any sport is to work home plate in a Major League Baseball game. But these sports you're talking about, football, basketball, the NHL, they're contact sports. There's going to be contact.
Sure.
Where do you draw the line? And you're right, Eli. I mean, unless you want to have a replay after every single damn play of a game, which we don't want, what do you do about it? You just got to live with it the way we've right. always lived with it our entire lives. You got to live with it.
Right. We are victims of the technology. How many times did I say that last football season? And here we go again.
And Carson Wentz, who I thought was going to be a monster star at one time, was sacked 8 times yesterday to the loss to Philly. And they had, I think, a 17-0 or 17-3 lead at one time.
Yeah, no, they had 17-0. And yeah. How ridiculous is it, by the way? That, I mean, if you can go on and on if you want about renaming the Washington Redskins. Yeah, yep. Let's not get into that again. But what they renamed them? The Washington football team? Now, when you think of Washington, D.C., what's the first thing you think of? Politics. Washington? How huh? come you can't, how come they couldn't quickly have renamed them the Washington politicians?
Well, let me tell you,
the Washington, this is ridiculous, the Washington football team.
Well, let me tell you what Dan Snyder said this morning in the Washington Post. He says, I believe that the name, the Washington football team, will be the name of the team.
That's what
he said. I'm sorry. Do you guys get up in the morning and read anything?
You can't do a vaccine.
I can't believe you would ask me a question like that, Danny. You played with Norm Cash for how many years? Norm Cash was my hero. He always said, get up in the morning. I don't get finished throwing up until noon.
No. He was always through throwing up by 10:30.
Just like you can't do a vaccine in a month, you can't rename a team, make the new logos, pass them around and have people vote on them or discuss them, the color schemes and all that. So for now, it's the simple just saying what they are. We are a football team that plays in Washington. You can't change the name and then change it back again after you've done your research and put the time in.
Well, they're not going to change it back to the Redskins. That's for sure.
But you don't call them the politicians in the meantime. You have to do it the right way.
Well, was it really that hard, Eli? Okay, you don't like the politicians. I kind of do. Maybe fine, other people don't. Saying, Eli, how much trouble would have been for the owner, little Danny Snyder, to say, okay, from now on, we are the Washington blank. You don't like it? Tough. Why don't they have a name for the football team? The Washington football team.
Because then they'll have to change it again. They'll have to change it again.
They should have changed it quickly and immediately.
They should have had
a vaccine in a week. We should have had a vaccine in a week. You're right.
Hang on a minute. I hope he puts his feet in cement and leaves it the way it's being called now and don't change anymore because he's livid. I mean, he's absolutely livid to make the statement that he wants to keep that name as the name of the team.
Yeah, he's just screwing around. Just quickly on the social messaging.
You don't have to be quickly. There's a lot of stuff to talk about.
As most of you know, I tend to lean liberal, but I'm a little tired of it. I think we have pandemic.
You tend to lean liberal.
let me finish. Okay. But we have fatigue with the pandemic and we have fatigue with the Black Lives Matter and all the messaging. And we saw that Thursday night when the fans in Kansas City booed the moment of unity, which is just a moment of unity. My goodness. It wasn't J.J. Watt said, my God, it wasn't an anthem or anything. It was just two teams showing unity. I think the Dolphins expressed it pretty well, saying that they stayed inside. There was two anthems. There's a national anthem, then actually it's a hymn, the lift every voice with the Black national anthem. But they put together about 20 Dolphins, a 2-minute tape, and I think this expresses pretty well their fatigue. It's enough to posturing. Let's do something real. Here's what some of these Dolphins have to say. Listen.
So if my dad was a soldier, but the cops killed my brother, do I stand for one anthem and then kneel for the other?
This attempt to unify only creates more divide.
So we'll skip this song and dance.
And as a team, we'll stay inside.
We need changed hearts, not just a response to pressure.
Enough. No more fluff and empty gestures.
Yeah, it's time. It's time for something to happen. It's interesting. People have already made up their minds the way I look at it, too. There's two signs in my neighborhood. One house has Trump Pence, and the one next door has Biden Harris. And I think to myself, is anybody going to change their mind at this point in my neighborhood? Am I going to look at a sign and say, oh, I'm going to vote for that guy instead of the other guy? So this is what it's kind of come down to, I think, in sports. Athletes have made their message. They've made their point. The league seemed to have gone along. Now it's time for the leagues to act. And Kaepernick said that too. It's time for the leagues to act. I think we really need to phase this stuff out for now and get back to playing.
Let me say something about that, Eli. Scott Wasserman, with whom I went to Michigan State, longtime MSU executive, now retired in Florida, tweeted something really interesting about this yesterday. He said, just what you're saying, you're not going to change anybody's minds. The whole idea is to make sure that the people with whom you agree vote, get them out to vote.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, and you got to take your hats off to the NBA. They're going to use every facility for voting. I mean, they're inviting everybody in those cities to come in and vote. I think it's marvelous what they're doing there. And they seem to be, and I'm sure the NFL is doing some things, but you know what? The NBA has really been out there, really been out front and coming up with these different programs.
And over the top too, Danny.
You're right. You're absolutely right, because some of it is over the top. And one of these guys just said a few minutes ago, I didn't catch the name, but he says, we trying to unify, all we're doing is creating more division. Mm-hmm. And that implies, obviously, that they're over the top. So somebody has to take control of the direction. And now they're going to go to Congress. They're hiring lobbyists and attorneys and everybody else. And they're trying to get some laws put in place. Mm-hmm. So we'll all wait for that.
So I didn't catch the name of the first young Miami Dolphin who just told us the cops killed my brother. Yeah. I'd like to know.
He said if.
Oh, if he did. Okay. Yeah. So I always like to know what some of these people who were killed were doing. Now, there were no blue lives.
Do we have to do this? I understand, Bob. Let's not get political.
You may understand. I want to talk about what happened in Los Angeles.
I don't want to get.
When two police officers were ambushed in their car by a punk.
But we don't. Okay. That's wrong.
Where were the Blue Lives Matter?
Bob,
where were they on Sunday and Saturday?
Violence and looting is wrong, and rioting is wrong. We all know that. Killing cops, killing anybody who isn't doing anything to you is wrong. We know that. Do we really need to get into the vitriol here? I'm going to get angina if I got to hear this song and this anger. Can we please move on from this and get into baseball, get into the Tigers, get into the White Sox, talk about our guest? I'd like to do that after you do a couple of words from our sponsors.
Hey, you're going to keep everybody in suspense about our guest today?
Yes. Go ahead.
You're going to keep them in suspense. I'm not going to give it away then. You'll give it away after I tell you.
We're not going to tell anybody. Listen, Bob, we're trying to keep it quiet that Bill Scherer will be here.
Don't say that. You stole Eli's thunder.
Babe Ruth is going to be here at 12:30.
Can we please move on?
All right, fine. But Eli, you know, you got up on the wrong side of bed this morning.
Yes, I am on the wrong side.
Wrong
side of the world these days.
But this is the only world we have, and we have to live with it and deal with it. It's going to be okay. It's going to be fine.
Maybe I need to remortgage again or get a new financial aid.
Here's what I want to do. You're going to be fine, folks, financially, despite this economic disaster that we've had in this country and around the world due to COVID. You're going to be fine. If you could set up an appointment to see Luke Nowacki of Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Lila's laughing. That was a good segue, wasn't
very
it?
Good,
so
you're so good. You're so good, I can't even believe it. Go ahead.
I was a voiceover artist in New York. Yeah, let me do my thing now.
Oh, my God, Eli. Did you have to open that door?
Let's say he is just so talented. We are so lucky to be with him.
Listen, Eli, there's one thing we both know. If you took the word I out of his vocabulary, he'd be speechless.
He's not going to use it at all in these two spots. Okay. Continue, please.
My buddy is such a smart guy. He went to the University of Michigan. That's the smartest thing he has ever said in the history of this program. He is so lucky to be here with me on this show. So anyway, back to Luke. He's helped families just like yours chart a path and then steadily, systematically guide them to financial independence. Let him develop a new path for you, or maybe you kind of like the one you're on, but Luke can refine that. You set up a complimentary consultation with him. He's going to answer all your questions. Then he's going to lay out a comprehensive plan for you to consider to fulfill your family goals and obligations, or maybe your business needs. We're confident promoting Luke Nowacki because we've heard from his clients that he's ethical, caring, knowledgeable, and he's going to be there to adjust and suggest whenever market forces alter the landscape. And folks, they're up and down, as you know. Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. It's a free consultation. So give Luke a call, 248-663-4748. Advisory services offered through Royal Alliance Associates. Other names or products mentioned here are independent of Royal Alliance. And with interest rates at record lows, they went down again last week. Did you see that? Consider taking advantage of the market conditions and refinance your home with David Hall Mortgage. He's been a prominent voice in the Detroit area for more than 30 years, built his business and his reputation of leadership in the mortgage market by consistently offering the choices, options, and the personal attention that separates him from the mortgage factories you see and you hear him out in the media all the time. It's why David Hall has so many thousands of satisfied clients. Hall Financial prides itself in keeping the process moving with a staff that consistently provides the fastest service in the business as well, generally three or fewer weeks. That's how you garner nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners just like you. So go to DavidHallMortgage.com to get started, or just call this easy number to remember, 248-308-5000. Hall Financial, lower payments, better options, more personal attention. And you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
Well, very good, Bob.
Very good, Bob.
I was a professional voiceover artist in New York.
Oh, Bob, stop it. By the way, the Big Ten had one meeting yesterday on Sunday afternoon, and they all came together for this meeting, and no vote was taken. They're going to vote in 3 or 4 days, they say, if, in fact, they do put it to the committee.
I'm sorry.
Aren't you surprised by that, Denny?
Yeah, I was surprised. I thought they would vote yesterday, but
listen,
there's got to be a lot of colleges that don't want to play, you know, and everybody's waiting right now to see what happens in the NFL, see what's happening in these other college games. God forbid we see surges again coming out of these facilities.
Yeah, but nobody's waiting. Nobody's waiting. Living in South Florida, I follow the U pretty closely. So, of course, Thursday night I watched on TV as they opened their season at home against Alabama Birmingham. Our buddy Larry Sorensen does color commentary for Wake Forest football on the radio. I listened to Larry Saturday night as they played Clemson. We all watched the NFL games yesterday. Notre Dame played Saturday afternoon. Yeah. Everybody's playing but the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Get with the program fast.
Maybe they know better. Maybe they trust the science.
The reason is there's two different – now, every student at Michigan State was just told yesterday, Sunday, to self-quarantine for the next 2 weeks. You've got with outbreaks all over campus, 342 cases so far. At Alabama, you got 5 football teams. That's how many people have the COVID. The difference is football is different. They protect the players differently. And also, it's their life. They just want to play. Most players, except for the few that opt out, will willingly take the chance because they need to play football. They're willing to put up with the risks. You know, the risk of corona is probably less than the risk of paralysis, you know, for some type of permanent injury. So this is what you have. You have the elite high school kids. You got the elite college players and the pros. They all want to play. And the protections and the money behind it and the medical testing and all that is on their side. So, yes, hopefully the Big Ten plays. It's with risks. Not all will play.
We had all kinds of trouble in baseball with people leaving the alleged, not necessarily a bubble, but people going out to strip clubs and things like that for a while. And these are younger kids than the kids that are in the major leagues that were doing these things. You don't think these kids are going to go to other places? And listen, they're having parties, God almighty, almost every university. As a matter of fact, Bradley University in Illinois, a huge, huge university, they are all shut down now and everybody's in quarantine. Nobody can even leave the school. So, you know, it's one thing after another. And if that happens on a campus, God forbid it happens in some stadium.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens, but I don't blame them all for giving it a try. We'll see what the Big Ten does. They supposedly voted 11-3 against having a season in August. There are only three teams.
They didn't reveal the vote, and people are pissed. Ohio State's understandably pissed. So is Iowa. So is Nebraska.
OSU,
they want to play football.
We know what it was in August,
11-3.
Yeah, and the three were Ohio State.
They didn't say that, though, at the time.
Yeah, Ohio State, Iowa, and Nebraska were the only three. They couldn't start playing right away because there's at least six teams.
That's just
that
what I said
play.
The last show.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're going to start playing in 2 or 3 weeks and they have to get ready, we're going to be sitting outside in Ann Arbor and East Lansing in the middle of December when it's 5 below and 2 feet of snow.
I know.
If they have fans, if they allow fans, but they're going to be playing in it.
Yeah, well, don't you love the snowball games? Isn't that what you long for as Lion fans?
Hey, pal, I was at Tiger Stadium in 1965, the night Lions fans pelted coach Harry Gilmer with snowballs off the field. That's a great tradition in football.
And that was before you became a professional voiceover artist, right?
Yeah, a little before that, though.
Oh, okay, just wanted to make sure.
I tell you, I was a singer, too, so I told you about that. You're a great guitarist.
Yeah.
You said that. I appreciate that. You've seen me play guitar and sing.
How about our Tigers? How about our Tigers?
Well, they're done, Danny. Here's next subject.
It was fun while it lasted. It really was fun while it lasted. I like this team. Now they're 20-26. They're out of it. They're 5.5 games out of the last playoff spot, which is the eighth, that is currently owned by Cleveland or the Yankees. Those are your seventh and eighth place playoff qualifiers. The Tigers are out. They have lost 10 of 13. And they lost, oh my God, they lost 14-0.
Yep.
On Saturday.
19-0 a couple days earlier.
Yeah, right. They managed to lose a total of, 33-0 in two games within a week. Michael Fulmer on Saturday, his ERA is up to 9.27. Their combined team ERA of 6.01 is 29th out of 30th. It's unfortunate because they do have a good offense. They've developed some young players, and I think the future is reasonably bright if they can get Mike.
I think so too, but you know, I looked at all these games, the ones that I saw, and I'm thinking about Gardy and what he's thinking. We start with the Thursday. We did the show Thursday morning, as everybody knows. We started the doubleheader at St. Louis. Scoobal was bombed, didn't like what I saw, but that kid's going to be a good pitcher. But then he brings in Joe Jimenez again. Why? I keep saying he should be in Toledo. And he was really bombed in a 12-2 final. I mean, the second game of that doubleheader was at least fun to see because the Cardinals broadcasters are as awful homers as anybody. They were gloating at the prospect of a doubleheader sweep leading 3-1 until the Tigers really staged a good comeback. So, I mean, you're right, Eli, there are some things. But, you know, you look at what happened Saturday night, as you said, to Fulmer. You look at what happened on Sunday. And, again, I'm looking at some strange decisions, you know, by Gardy. Look at what happened with Casey Mize, Denny's favorite whipping boy. Kid was terrific on Friday.
Let me tell you something about pitching, okay? Somebody's got a hold of this kid finally. What have I been saying? If you throw your fastball more, you'll start to become effective and get set up the other pitches.
Right.
Threw almost 70% fastballs the other day. Two seamers, four seamers, and cutters. Those are all fastballs of a different sort. Lo and behold, somebody got a hold of him and started telling him, listen, pal, you can't pitch up here with that little lousy garbage that you're throwing up there. These are major league hitters, and they shall sit on you, and they shall beat you to death. So, but 5 1/3 innings does not make him a Cy Young Award winner. So let's be careful. All right. He didn't look like he was going to win 20 games the other day, or 15 or 10 or 5.
Looked like he was going to pitch a no hitter for a while.
Bob. You're right. He almost had a no hitter. He only needed four.
Like he was going to pitch a no hitter. And let me ask you
Bob,
this, Danny.
Let me ask you this, Danny.
So the White Sox get a run. They break through in the sixth finally against Casey. They score a run on a grounder. That made it 3-1. Casey Mize at this point has thrown 76 pitches. And Gardy pulls him.
So Cisneros
Did you like that?
You know why? I'll tell you why. Because the ball.
Yeah, Cisneros came in and blew it.
I'm going to tell you why, Bob. Because the ball started coming up. In the beginning of the game, he was pitching down. He was hitting spots pretty good. He was mixing his pitches, and as I said, the fastball. But all of a sudden, in the fifth inning, the stuff started coming up. And once the stuff starts coming up, that's a red light for the manager to go out there and get him before he falls behind. They don't want this kid to get embarrassed anymore either. They want to protect this kid. And hopefully, you know, he'll be able to straighten himself out next year in Toledo.
If Mayo Smith had pulled you in the sixth inning, leading 3-1, having thrown 76 pitches, you would have been doing handstands all the way back.
Because he won 30 games and Casey Mize won zero. Okay,
that's a little bit of a break. Difference. I like Casey Mize. I don't care what you say.
Okay.
Well, good. Well, I'm glad you're
good. We all like Casey Myers. We're all rooting for Casey. You know,
okay, okay, I want to mention this too, because really what I'm doing is you're ripping on Casey. I'm ripping on Gardner.
I'm not ripping on Casey. I'm just saying what he did in this game was all of a sudden the light went on, and he's now throwing almost 70% fastballs. Okay. That's what he's got to do.
He had a nice outing in a game that the result does not matter anymore.
Right. Okay, here's the last point I want to make about that game. Ooh. Tigers are losing 4-3. They're going into the ninth inning. Daz Cameron is safe on an error to lead off the ninth. There's only one thing you got to do. You have to get that guy to second base. And Gardy doesn't order a bunt. Romine flies out instead. Peretta's at number nine. Bats versus a tough righty. Why? Put up Alcantara, a left-handed hitter, instead. Paredes grounds into a force. That makes two out. Reyes strikes out. 4-3. The White Sox win it. I don't like what I'm seeing from some of Gardy's moves.
Well, let me say one thing about Gardy. I am sure, as much as I can see you in this screen this morning, that Gardy is getting direct orders for every player that they put out there on the mound, and they're telling Gardy what they want to see every ball game. They're even calling the signals for the catcher. I mean, they don't need to do that. Most of these guys know what pitching's all about. But the bottom line is, Gardy's being told what to do, and they're showcasing. You know, you talk about Jimenez. Hey, they're showcasing him for somebody. I mean, maybe there's some value there, but I mean, you don't see it right now. But you know what? Good things will happen if they just got to. There's a stick to itness that you really got to have. But I don't see the thing that Eli sees, the offense. I don't see the offense at all. And we got to have a guy in the middle of that lineup that makes everybody in front of him a better hitter and the guy behind him a better hitter. And we don't have that asset at this point in time because the big guy just doesn't want to play anymore.
How about if they go out and sign a couple of free agents, Denny? Yeah, I'm sure you'd be in favor of that.
I think it's great.
That's what they should do, right?
Yep, absolutely.
This, you know, I look back at all the trades back when they were rebuilding from 2016, 17, 18 on, whether when they traded J.D. Martinez, Justin Wilson, yep, Justin Verlander, Leonis Martin, Nick Castellanos, Shane Green. Not one pitcher that they got in any of that is doing anything. They got three infielders for Martinez. They got Paredes for Avila. They got Candelario for Justin Wilson. They got a couple of guys you never heard of for Jay Upton, Grayson Long and Elvin Rodriguez. For Verlander, they got Frankie Perez. He was supposed to be the prize. He hasn't pitched at all. So even when they traded Mike Fiers, Nolan Blackwood, Logan Schrott, I don't know what position they play. They're not pitchers. Nobody's up here. So they haven't added a pitcher of any value, including their draft picks, except for Mize, Drumright for a minute. So they haven't added pitching, and that's the problem.
Yeah.
That's
and guess what, Eli? The pitcher has to pitch to somebody. That would be the catcher. Now, we're going to hear Billy Shearer tell us coming up shortly about how the Tigers let James McCann get away and how he got the White Sox to pick him up. Brandon, you know this kid's name. It's slipping my mind. He's coming up in the minors for the Tigers right now, and he's getting headlines in the Detroit papers as the catcher of the future. Wait a minute. I thought that Rogers was the catcher of the future. Wait a minute. I thought that Griner was the catcher of the future. Now we're on our third kid catcher of the future in the last 3 years? What the hell is going on?
Well, you can't have too many catchers with futures.
Hey, coming up Brandon, did you want to answer that? I'm sorry, Brandon. Do you have an answer for that?
I do not know the particular catcher that he is
discussing. There was a big article on him the other day.
My biggest question, though, seriously, is next year when we see spring training, when we see the kickoff of the 2021 MLB season, can we finally see, and I'm serious here, I don't care if this team goes 0-162 next year, but if Torkelson and if Daz Cameron and if Matt Manning and Casey Mize, and I want the kids up. I want Riley Green. Can we see that next year?
Yep.
Yeah, I hope Riley Green's ready next year. I don't think he is right now. I know we got to go to a commercial break. Folks, we got a lot more coming up on the show today for it, but I really want to mention this one last baseball note. Then Eli, you can go where you want to go. Okay. I want to tell you about a guy that most of you have never heard of. His name is Jake Cronenworth. He's from St. Clair, Michigan. He helped win a state high school baseball championship there. Then he went to the University of Michigan. He was the Wolverines' closer during his career in Ann Arbor. Then he was a seventh-round draft choice of Tampa. He was traded to San Diego last December. The Padres called him up six weeks ago, and Cronenberg is tearing it up in San Diego. You know what he's doing? He's hitting 315 as their starting shortstop. And some of the folks, the good folks in St. Clair, Michigan, got together, figured out how to get their pictures into seats as part of the cutouts that can be seen in some stadiums around the league. So Jake Cronenberg now also has his own cheering section at empty Petco Park.
Coming up, now Bill Shearer, by the way, as the Tigers have lost 9 straight to the White Sox, an incredible offensive lineup with the Eloy Jimenez, the rookie, and Jose Abreu. Bill Shearer, who pitched for the Tigers from 84 to 86, has been with the White Sox since 03 and has scouted a lot of the major league players, including James McCann, who have come there. He's going to tell us about his hilarious days here in Detroit. And he's got some great stories. The guy is funny as can be. And also how the White Sox have done successfully what the Tigers are now in the process of trying to do. So that Bill Shearer in a moment. But first, I want to remind you that Feldman Automotive is Michigan's number one Chevy dealer. 5 locations, Novi, New Hudson, Lansing, Livonia, and Highland. 9 locations at all has Feldman. Feldman Hyundai of New Hudson, Kia of Novi, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram of Woodhaven. And as the big run on used cars is draining the supply in America, you can go to Michigan's top-rated pre-owned center in Waterford, simply known as 1-800-PRE-OWNED by Feldman. Buy a fully inspected and guaranteed pre-owned from Feldman. Relax with the exclusive. Drive it for 3 days. Love it or bring it back. Guarantee. Also, they have an exclusive guaranteed credit approval. You can't lose on that. We're proud and confident you can find what you need at one of Feldman's 9 locations. Let them earn your business or buy online at FeldmanAuto.com. Hassle-free at home and in the showroom. And also Power Home Solar, America's fastest-growing solar energy company. All their state-of-the-art panels made in America. With solar energy, you save money, help the environment, and avoid those costly and infuriating power outages, because Power Home Solar is partnered with Generac, which is the nation's largest provider of in-home backup battery and generator systems. Put the two together and you will lower your energy bills and eliminate power outages, yes, for the life of your home. Financing starting at $99 a month. Call them at 1-800-POWER-90. Save an additional $1,800. Support our guys and they'll continue to support us. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. We need to thank our radio audience, who apparently we have heard from in Toledo at WCW.
Oh, yes, we have.
Thank you all for listening.
Oh, yes, we have.
Okay. We've heard from Toledo.
And your ass is ours, Eli.
That's right.
In the mailbag
segment. We'll
talk
about that later. Meanwhile, you're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Right, we're going to do this day in sports in the mailbag. Bob, any obituaries today?
I didn't, fortunately, see any of my childhood heroes or anybody else who died in sports. Did I miss something?
Well, no, but there's a great musical one, and I want to know if anybody has ever heard of one of my favorite reggae artists of all time.
Oh, I did see that. I saw that. Yeah, I'm not into reggae at all.
Toots Hibbert of Toots and the Maytals. Do you remember this song? Go ahead, Brandon.
I am happy, I am gay.
It's the great Toots and the Maytals.
And you know what? In the interest of equal time, I much prefer Denny's I Am Happy, I Am Gay song to that. To any
you don't like reggae?
I don't like reggae. So Denny, go ahead and sing your song.
You don't like Bob Marley? Jim Cliff?
I couldn't dig it,
Peter
man. I just
Tosh.
Didn't dig it.
No, I'm not a big in that either.
You call yourself
two quick things. Looks like Blake Griffin is on his way to Brooklyn. That's number one. And number two, you're not going to believe it. I'm going to hang on to your seats. Colin Kaepernick has been recommended for the Hall of Fame in the NFL.
That's crazy.
Can you imagine?
No, that doesn't make sense.
Who recommended him?
Well, there's a committee.
The committee recommended Colin Kaepernick for the Hall of Fame?
I'd like to see that.
He was nominated.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's just
they recommended him for the Hall of Fame. Nomination is the same thing, guys.
I'm sure there's a lot of names, but without
we try to keep up here with the playoffs. I think they're boring everybody. So the way the division of labor has worked out, Eli's kind of been watching the NBA playoffs. I've been watching the NHL playoffs. And all I got to say is this, Eli, with Dallas now leading Vegas 3-1 going into Monday night's Game 5. Of course, that's over for most of you listening to this. And the Islanders on the verge of being eliminated by Tampa. We're going to have the Lightning versus the Dallas Stars in the Stanley Cup Finals in September. What are the TV ratings going to be for that one?
0.
Unbelievable. I mean, it's just a shame the way it's worked out, because a lot of the games have been really, really good. You got anything to say about the NBA playoffs?
Well, I think,
Wait a minute before you move on. The ratings for hockey would be the same as the NBA right now. because they're over the top.
That's a good point. Maybe
the NBA will do better.
Not true. Yeah, but their success right now is out of the country. That's where all their success is right now. That's where they're making all their money, out of the country, not here.
We got not one, gentlemen, but we got two United States Opens to talk about. On Sunday, Dominic Thiem staged a fantastic comeback from two sets down to beat Alexander Medvedev in a great men's final match, and Naomi Osaka won the women's final set.
No, it's Alexander Zverev, not Medvedev.
Zverev. I'm sorry. Yeah, Zverev, I got the evs and avs mixed.
That was an incredibly compelling. I had kind of stopped watching because I thought that Zverev was going to win. Then I hear the grunting and groaning in the other room as they're continuing to play and play and play and play. Yeah. It should have been over in 2 hours because Thiem became the first in 71 years to win after losing the first two sets. And in that, and John McEnroe, who, as you know, played some epic U.S. Open finals, said he has never seen effort like those two guys, where Thiem, his legs were cramping up. You had Zverev was double faulting because he had his legs were cramped and almost gone. Also, it was an incredible act of attrition that finally Thiem won. It was but with no fans, it's just all too weird for me.
Didn't like that. And here's what else I really, really, really didn't like. I don't know if you guys even know about this. Billie Jean King was not there. For the first time since 1959, she did not go to the U.S. Open. You all know Billie Jean King's not one of the greatest figures in tennis history, in sports history. 76 now, in great shape. But the USTA made a decision not to credential her for the event. They said they were just following the COVID-19 guidelines, health and safety protocols, and that's fine. But couldn't they make an exception to get Billie Jean King in somehow?
Well, not if none of them are there, I guess, but she's not going to be the only one. They're going to not let Martina in and not going to let the others in. And I don't even know how many, I guess Chris Everett was there and McEnroe was there, but not too many others.
By the way, we have the same thing down at Tiger Stadium. I mean, certain people can get in, certain people can't, but you can't bring anybody with you if you want to go to a game down there. So
I'm talking Billie Jean King in tennis here.
Okay. Anyway, that Park.
It's somebody very close to this show that is, never mind.
You can't go then, eh?
I can't. That's what surprised me. I can't.
This day in 1909, Ty Cobb.
Wait a minute. I can't believe you're rushing me here, Eli. You never do that. I want you guys to talk with me about the other United States Open, which begins here in the New York area at Wingfoot for the first time in 14 years. Yeah. Mamaroneck, New York, one of those beautiful suburbs where Eli used to live in Westchester County. Mm-hmm. Now, they've hosted 9 professional major championships at Wingfoot. Only twice has the score ever been below par. Davis Love won the PGA in 97. Fuzzy won the 84 U.S. Open. The most famous, Hale Irwin's U.S. Open victory there at 7 over par in 74, which was such a bitch that Dick Schaap wrote a book about it entitled The Massacre at Wingfoot. Brooks Koepka is not playing this year due to injury. He finished second last year at Pebble Beach. And Eli remembers well the identity of the defending champion at the U.S. Open, Gary Woodland. 35 years old. I said it was a fluke. He'd never win another major. Eli, what say you?
Well, he may never win another major, but my only thing at the time was you guys made it seem like, what a fraud, what a joke. He shouldn't be.
I didn't say that either.
What did you say?
He's a hell of a player. He's a hell of a player. He's won any number of PGA Tour events.
Yeah, 24 of them. So what was your point?
My point is that sometimes you'll get a guy like Gary Woodland, who's a solid PGA touring player, who somehow one day in his life wins a major, and that's the last one he's going to win.
Listen,
I did not mean to disrespect Gary Woodland.
Unless he celebrated way too much, all the money is going to be bet on the guy that just took the $15 million from Federal Express.
He is playing
lights out. The last time we saw somebody playing this good, this great every week was when Tiger was in his prime, when he was doing everything right and just tearing up golf courses. I played Wingfoot. I played it twice. And I got to tell you something. Both times I played it 2 or 3 weeks after they had the tournament. And I'll tell you, that grass will go up to your knees in some places. That's the reason they don't break par.
And that's what makes it so interesting, because if somebody's got a 2-shot lead now and they go to the 18th, you know they're going to get a par, or if they play it really safe, maybe a bogey.
Sure.
No lead is safe when the winning score is over par.
Right.
You can get it in the crap and get a double in a minute, and so that's why it could be very, very compelling. And the higher the scores, the more interesting the tournament can be.
Yeah, some people like that. Some don't. Mark Canizero, the longtime golf writer of the New York Post, had a headline article Monday. There will be whining, because you know they will. Sure. But I'll tell you, there's only one good thing about having to play the U.S. Open this time of year. Our weather here in New York is just beautiful. It's sunny. It's cool. It's comfortable. It's going to be real nice for the golfers out on the course this weekend.
Listen, this golf course was criticized many times, but the other golf course that comes to mind was the one in Minneapolis, which I can't think of the name right now, in Minnesota, when they said this golf
Hazeltine.
Course, Hazeltine. They said, this golf course, they really made a mistake here. Where the hell is the corn? You know, so you know, it was a mess when they first got there.
And it was a Shinnecock, I think it was, that Zach Johnson said they've lost. Maybe it was a minute. They've lost the course. They were right. They made it too tough. Can I please do this day in sports? The show is off going very, very long. We still have a guest coming up.
So with Denny having won his 30th, which we covered at the top of the show, what else is there? I mean, that's like that takes the cake.
Well, I'm trying to tell you, this is the second time I've started and you haven't let me do it. So maybe I can start this time and you'll let me go.
I will. I promise you, I will.
Ty Cobb clinched the AL home run title in 1909 with his ninth home run of the season. 58, Brar and Spahn, the first lefty to win 20 more games nine times. Can you imagine winning 20 games nine times?
He became something.
A New York Met, by the way, in 1965 after he already won 350 games. The Lions, then the Portsmouth Spartans, played the first NFL game on this day, September 14th in 1930. By the way, they won it. They didn't drop a pass in the end zone in the game. Wow. And also, this is the day in 87, the Blue Jays hit a record 10 homers. We had Ernie Witt on talking about that because he hit the record-breaking ninth. And this day in 03, Baltimore running back Jamal Lewis set the NFL single-game rushing record for 295 yards. It has been broken once since for the all-time record holder for yards gained in a game. And who is he? He is a Lion. I'll give you a hint.
Would you repeat that, please?
Billy Sims.
The all-time single game rushing record holder who broke the record in 07 of Jamal Lewis, who had 295 yards. The record is 296. He's a Lion. Who set the record?
Either Barry or no Barry.
Adrian Peterson set it in 07. Okay, he was a rookie back then.
That was a trick question. That's a good question.
That's a trick question. And frankly, that's
all. Oh, he's a Lion, huh? He's only been a Lion for an hour.
And only because I remembered when this happened in 1962, Tom Cheney of the Senators struck out 21 Orioles, but it was in
the knuckleballer. Knuckleballer. Yeah.
Okay. Now the mailbag, please.
You can tweet us if you'd like to join the mailbag at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. And the first tweet comes from a close friend of Eli's. I've met him once or twice. I think he's from Detroit. He has every right to say this. Elliot Lerner, who says, Bob, I'm giving you full permission to refer to the Detroit NFL team as the FLs. Sean O'Hara comes up. He says, another one bites the dust, meaning great interview with Doug English. Glad Doug put Eli in his place and got his two cents in regarding BLM without being shouted down by Eli, as Eli shouted me down on the program today. Iffy, what would a show be without Iffy the Dopester? I was so impressed with Doug English. What an intelligent guy. But now, fellas, listen to this line of reasoning from one of our ever-popular no-name texters. Is there a more definitive Detroit Lion than Doug English, whose repeated message during your interview was that there's more to life than football and winning? Before the interview, I never knew how perfect he was to be a Detroit Lion. His message should be a permanent banner across the rafters of Ford Field. There's more to life than winning. There's more to life than football. Now, Denny and I are going to gang up on Eli for a change. Usually they gang up on me. At our website submissions, asknofilter@gmail.com, Jerry Eversman joins us. He responds to Eli's taunts that no one in Toledo, Ohio, is listening to us on the radio there, writes Jerry. Yes, Eli, we deputies at the sheriff's office do listen to the show. And previously on the show, via the mailbag, you guys read a letter from someone at the Toledo Police Department who said the officers listen to all of your shows over morning coffee. WCWA Radio also runs promos for your show on the air all day long. T-Town is part of Tiger Town. Don't kid yourself. We love our Mud Hens who become future Detroit Tigers. Oh, and one final thing. Bob, would you please mask up and give COVID-19 its due? It's real. Our officers are all wearing their masks. And Jerry, I really respect that, but you didn't tell me the next time I drive through Toledo on the way to Detroit whether you boys are going to arrest me if you see me driving without my mask.
Hey, Bob,
on my car.
I'll give you a card that will get you off one time.
I appreciate that.
What? Get out of jail free?
Yep.
All right, here's Pete Reilly. I don't think we've heard from Pete before. And he writes, you guys talk about what's wrong with Matthew Boyd. And the fact, and this is really to
Denny. You mean besides he can't pitch?
This is really a comment to Denny. He says, you guys talk about what's wrong with Matthew Boyd and the fact that Gardy's friends are hired as his coaches. I think Gardy was hired for the same reason Ralph Houk was hired in the 70s. You oversee the rebuild, and when it's done, you hire the next manager to take it to the next level. Listen to this, boys. Here's a great point from Pete. There's a manager currently not even in the game right now. He's going to be available in a few months, who's pretty good with pitching staffs and has friends who can teach the young Tigers how to pitch. Ready for this one?
Yeah.
AJ Hinch. You like that one?
Yeah.
He says, I love listening to you guys and enjoy it when you mix it up with each other, which, of course, is every show.
Well, it's got to be somebody who can come in here and teach mechanics and teach the game, but it's got to be mechanics. Somebody's got to come in here and show them how to really throw a good slider. So the slider that goes down rather than sideways. And the changeup sound looks like most of these kids have got a changeup of some kind, but they cannot oversee. Somebody has to just tell them, you got to throw the fastball if you're going to play in the big leagues. Otherwise, it's your chop liver.
Well, when you get a new manager, you'll get a completely new coaching staff. Okay, you ready, everybody?
I got one more, and I'm surprised to announce.
Two things.
I'm not done with the mailbag.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob.
And I can't believe Brandon didn't comment on it. I can't believe Brandon's not frothing at the mouth. Brandon, A.J. Hinch managing the Detroit Tigers? You got to love that.
I think
he's not going to happen.
Coach. You know, this guy's not going to get in baseball for a little bit longer. He still has to pay his punishment, you know, for being a cheater. So,
and he's not going to get the job. I'm going to tell you, the catcher is going to get the job.
No, Lance is not going to get the job.
Yes, he is.
Parrish is not going to get the job.
Absolutely.
I hope so. We love Lance.
I'd love to see it happen.
Yeah, really nice. And then we want to tell you folks also that you can call us and leave a message for us on our hotline. That's 760-89-BALLS or text us as well there. And here's Ty Emelander, who's been with us on the show in the past. And he writes, I love the show. Listen to every one you guys have ever done. But I do have a question for all three of you. I continue to hear on your show what Colin Kaepernick was trying to bring to light with his kneeling. Did you not see him wearing a Fidel Castro shirt at the press conference? Did you not see the cop pig socks he wore? Yep. Did you not see how he sabotaged his own tryout? I have no issue with the former third string quarterback taking a knee. But if he took this stand in Castro's Cuba, he'd be at minimum imprisoned or worse. I agree with some of his points, but his actions have lost me. I can't believe how many have fallen for Kaepernick's supposed bringing attention to a social issue while he made millions playing the martyr and obviously didn't really want to play anyway. Black lives matter for sure. Bad cops need to be held accountable for sure. But the man in pig socks and a murderous dictator shirt is no way, is nobody I would want any of my kids to look
up
to.
How many times have we said that this just alienates our audience? Why do you insist on reading?
What alienates our audience?
But that's the mailbag. That's different.
Okay, fine. By the way, Lance Parrish is the same age, I believe, as Ron Gardner. I believe they're both born in maybe a year or two. Gardy was born in 57. I think Lance is a little bit. Does age matter? Because I guess not, because they hired Gardy when he was in his mid-60s anyway.
Well, I was just saying what I said earlier, Eli, if Lance does manage this ball club, and I hope he does, and the Tigers are losing by a run going into the ninth, and they get the first guy on, Lance knows enough to bunt him into scoring position to tie the game as opposed to Ron Gardenhier.
Okay. And I got two things. Number one, if he develops there, we found your baseballs. We finally found your baseballs. And then number two, I'm going to be on Denny McClain Facebook all afternoon today talking to people from 3 o'clock to 7 o'clock about the 1968 World Series and the questions and answers we're going to take all day. So
is this one of those things that you and Pete Rose were also talking about having a thing where you get individual fans to chat with you like that? Yeah. Are you going to do that or not? You haven't followed up.
I think we're going to do that. I think we're going to do that in the near future.
Okay.
Okay, well, this is now going to turn into the longest show in No Filter Sports history.
How entertaining has it been, Eli?
Okay.
Wait for Billy Shearer.
Can you please let me finish a sentence? So strap it on. Strap it on. Here comes Billy Shearer. Get ready. This is going to be an assault on your ears. Well, former Tiger Bill Scherer spent 17 years in the White Sox front office as a special assistant to Ken Williams, the general manager. He has overseen the acquisition of some outstanding and productive White Sox free agent players. White Sox just burning up the league this year with an amazing offensive lineup and some pretty good pitching, too. Bill was here from 84 to 86, came up was traded here on August 28th. Of 1984 for Carl Willis, kind of a right-handed reliever for the big lanky lefty. Is lanky the right word to be 6'4", 170? You could say skinny, but lanky sounds best. And Bill Scherer joins us now. Thanks for joining us, Bill. Tell us about joining the Tigers. You pitched for the Reds for, 100 games in 82 and 83, and then suddenly you come here in August. Tell us how that all went down.
I'll always believe that. I obviously came up with the Reds, and it was one of those years. We had Vern Rapp, the new manager, in 84, and 83 was a good start for me because it was the first full year. I didn't have many full years in the big leagues, but that year. But I struggled early, and then all of a sudden, by the All-Star break, they sent me down, and I lambasted the Reds. I said, I'll never wear a uniform again for the Reds, blah, 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 and then I went to Wichita, and I had an insight of what was going on. A buddy of mine who I played ball with, in the minor leagues in Eugene, he was connected to George Bradley, which I did not know. And he asked me, what are you doing here? I said, I'm back in the minors. I've got to perform and try to get back. And by the time we went and had a few beers at some American Legion Hall, the Reds had this kind of thing that you pitch three innings or you came in relief and the next day was off. Well, I pitched three innings and the next day I was back pitching again. But he made a comment. He goes, what are you doing? Like I said, like he knew something was up. And then I pitched. He said, I wish you'd have thrown, harder like you did. I said, well, I did pitch six innings. He didn't get up and he runs. I said, what do you want me to do? So he goes, if something's going to happen, it's going to happen in the next day or two. Well, I got back to Wichita. I was staying at the Wichita Royale. And I guess Bob Houser was there. And my light was on. And they said, Bob Houser would like you to go to his room. And I go there. And he said, Bill, we just traded you today. And I said, really? I said, to who? He goes, well, they're the Tigers, Detroit Tigers. I said, gee, I go from the worst team to now minor leaguer to the best team in baseball. And so, it was sort of like, wow, I'm leaving the Reds since signing with them from 77 to 84. I almost like thinking, I don't mince words too much. And I actually was almost speechless. And I remember Ted Kluszewski came over to me up in the press box, and I was sort of quiet. And Ted goes, he puts his arm around me. He goes, Bill, the first trade is always the hardest. He goes, you came up, you knew everybody here from the player development to the scouts to the players you played with. He goes, but, things work out for mysterious ways. Well, I wish Ted was alive now after playing with 12, 13 organizations. I just ran out of uniforms. So I thought, well, God, that's it's true. So I met the team in Seattle, and the next thing you know it, there I am with Sparky. And I found out later, I had George Sugar. And George Sugar managed Sparky, and eventually later on, Sparky managed Pete Rose. So I had mentor to mentor to mentor. So I got there, and next thing you know it, I got in the first game, and the first hitter I faced was Elvin Davis. And, as you know the story, I pitched, 18 games, and it was a playing on a team like that. And again, I just said to somebody, I just hope I don't screw up. One of those kind of things like Donnie Moore.
But you did. Wait a minute. Tell us what happened the day you got there. And Sparky says, go out there and warm up. And you start pitching. And Bergman jumps in. And he doesn't want to get in against you because he said, him in the National League. I'm not going to stand here. So what happened?
So in, the kingdom, Sparky said, Bergy, jump in. He goes, no, I faced him already in San Francisco. So he was so far away from the plate in the bullpen that the first pitch I threw was a runner that went right into his ribs. And I felt so bad because Bergy tried to squeeze everything else and he pulls muscles in his back. So I said, oh, my son of a bitch. I said, now all of a sudden I go, poor Bergy. And he actually, I think, went on the DL. So, and Bergy didn't want to jump in, which, you're in the bullpen, you're just warming up. And unfortunately, the ball got away and it was going right to his ribs. So, Bergy, I'm sure where he's at today, I'm sure he'll forgive me. He'll forgive me for that.
So you've been scouting for a long, long time, and you wind up with the White Sox, and they've got this great relationship, I understand, still down in Cuba and South America or Central America. Can you tell us, I assume everybody scouted Mize. We've got Mize now right now in the big leagues, and he hasn't been really impressive. do you guys, can you tell us what you guys saw in him besides, we gave him $8 million. Was he worth $8
million? Right. Well, I got to tell you, Denny, I mean, I did amateur for 7 years as an area guy with the Marlins, and then I went to cross-check with, you know, nationally with the Reds. So, you know, I haven't seen an amateur game in 18 years. This will be my 19th year with the White Sox. So most of the time, the time I see them is in spring training. And you know as well as I do, go to spring training, the games don't mean anything. It's just nice seeing young guys with good arms. But you know, the games aren't, the lights aren't on, everybody's playing, and then even like the September call-ups. Everybody can't wait to get their golf clubs and everything else. So you take that with a grain of salt. And so I did watch him on TV. I see, you know, he's got that split, and he's not really, you know, I don't want to say overpowering with all these gun devices they've got now, 96 and above. But, I mean, he does have a devastating, you know, split, I guess, like the Williams kid in Milwaukee, where that's supposed to be his out pitch, I guess, like the Jack's, you know, forkball. So I can only go or gauge of what I've seen on TV. I take it for what it's worth. I'm going to let time play its course with a guy like Mize. I guess you know as well as I do. We go to spring training, we see first-round guys. That's wonderful. But now you're in uniform. Yeah, they may get a few more years, but time will play its course because the best players play in the big league. So in the case of Mize, whether he is not a legitimate one or whether he's a 2-3 starter, if he can throw enough quality strikes like what Cleveland guys do, have tempo, throw strikes, command the plate, that's all you ask. So I'm only going to take it for what it's worth now with a guy like Mize. Next year and beyond, he's on the clock. Now he's on the clock. So I'm gonna let time play its course, regardless of what they spend, because you know as well as Jack was drafted in the fifth round. I played with Bruce Berenti. You played with some other guy. Jay Howell was a 30-some round guy. I mean, nobody gives a rat's ass what these guys did. Maybe the front office do because they spent a lot of coin on these guys. But when it comes to winning, the best players play and the best arms play.
And this kid who just pitched a no-hitter for the Cubs yesterday was in the 22nd round, Alec Mills. So 22nd round.
I mean, Kyle Kendricks. I mean, Hendricks. I mean, you know, it's marveling that these guys throw 96 and 97, but they can't command their fastball. And I understand why. I mean, we got 30 teams, and they got really good arms. But unfortunately, it's almost amazing. We look at some guys like Hendricks and everybody else going, oh, my God, you throw strikes. Well, that was a norm. If you couldn't command your fastball, you had to throw breaking balls behind the count. If you didn't, guess what? You had an explain back to the minor leagues the guy didn't develop again. They're developing him in the big league just because it is what it is, whether it's money, whether it's numbers, nobody goes quality starts. So, you know, you live with it, I guess. I'm not going to knock the game. I think they're very talented, but sometimes I have to walk out and have my cigarette on the porch and say, why am I watching a 3.5-hour game and this guy can't command the fastball? What am I doing? Let me just pop a top and have another beer, because that's ridiculous.
Well, there used to be a time, too, when you never got to the big leagues unless you had a fastball that moved and you had decent control of it. Not that you were hitting the corners, but at least you were throwing strikes, and that's long gone.
Oh, it sure is. And quality starts. I used to laugh. I said, when they're playing these 7-inning games, I laughed. I said, can I play those so I could pitch 3 innings so you could say I had a quality start? Boy, I'd like to get the coin in my pocket for that.
You'd have to pitch four. It'd have to be four. It's more than half the game. It'd be four innings in a 7-inning. Go ahead, Bob. You got a question for Bill? Go ahead.
I do. Billy, I know that you found out the true secret to life a long time ago. You're one of the greatest athletes the Buffalo, New York area ever produced. You're in the Hall of Fame there, so you must have been a huge Sabres fan.
They ran out of names, so they picked me out of a guy in hat. That's the reason.
I want to mention a quote that you made. The great, the legendary Larry Robinson, when he retired from the Canadiens, sat out a year and hated every minute in the business world. He said, I would have cleaned out toilets to get back to hockey. And you said, quote, there's nothing like being in a ballpark. I've seen the real world and you can keep it. I'd rather stay in the baseball bubble, end quote. Little did you know how prescient, of course, that would be.
The bubble, yeah.
I guess when you're from Buffalo, New York, and all your people are either unionized or they're working at, you know, the Tonawanda plant at GM or iron workers and everything else. And as my wife said, you know, one time you said, I really like to live in the real world. So then when I went to, very briefly, in a couple months after I got on a plane, I was management trainee at a supermarket called Tops. And I put my fist through a box, and the guy who's the manager said, I don't think you're going to be management material. I said, I'm not going to quit. You can fire me, but I'm not going to quit. He goes, you're fired. I said, thank you, so I can get unemployment. I just said, you know, if that's the real world, and I really have so much respect for people who go to work, regardless of what they do for a living. But for 45 years that I've been in this game, I wouldn't trade places no matter what coin you have in your pocket, from playing to amateur to pro to Latin America to the major leagues. The people I've met, whether it's, you know, the legend guys that are all gone, now I become the gray hair of the old veteran, where Fergusi's are gone and Mike Jorgens is retired and, you know, Vukovic is still around, but Keeson's dead. I mean, I've lost so many guys from that side of the game that all of a sudden now I'm looking around going, I mean, some people are afraid to talk to me. I said, I'd do anything for anybody. I said, but don't roll your eyes to me. You're not that good. And so with these kids today, they're bright. They're smart. They got numbers. And I respect that. I know the game has changed somewhat. But if you haven't wore a jock strap or you don't know what it's like to be released or traded or go through amateur to pro to major to Latin America, then you better be careful who you're talking to. Yep. I said, I'll sit in a bar and have beer. You don't have to drink. Drink pop. And we can go back and forth and discuss comparison by comparison. But get your computer out of your face. Talk to me like we're talking about the game. Execution. I said, I don't even know why they have a third base coach because none of them look at him. I said, well, I just put him in a wheelchair and put a cigar in his mouth. Because they don't even look at the third base coach when the ball goes to the right-hand, right-field corner. I said, what happened to one-way leads? What happens about inside out? Now, the World Series proved us something. Speed does matter. You don't have to steal bases. Take the extra base, you know, cause havoc with the pitcher to make adjustments up there and throwing pitches. This game hasn't changed. That still happens. You just have to work at things. Unfortunately, it's just a little bit easier for some of these kids. But don't get me wrong, I'm not taking anything away from them. They're talented. But I'm glad I played in the 70s and 80s and had coaches like that that didn't give a rat's ass who you thought you were. You wear the uniform from the community. You come and go. That's the community's team. Just like why I'm such a diehard Bills fan. You know, Kelly, my favorite player was Joe Ferguson. I mean, they come. But the next group of guys put the uniform, just like the Tigers. And when that goes, the fans go there to root for you. And when they boo because you're losing. They'll take it to heart. I said, but these guys, whether you don't – people spend a lot of money to see a guy run 4-8 to first base when he really runs 4-2. Kick yourself in the ass and run the ball out. I said, because people are getting off of work, don't pay money to watch you play. Sooner or later, they're not going to come. So and these kids, somebody's got to put them in their place. You know, if, in the old days, if a guy didn't run it out, the coach didn't even say anything. Okay, Jimmy, you're in the game, you're out. And you knew in your heart the reason why I'm out of the game because you didn't hustle.
Right.
That's the key. We can't be perfect. We know how hard this game is. But that's where the asylum is. They're running the asylum. And you know what? My day's coming where I'm going to thank everybody, give everybody a big hug, and they all can kiss my ass. Because this is the kind of game that infuriates me. You know, I just play the game, learn, practice.
I want to go back.
That's why
I'm listening. Sure, Billy, you know what? You blew it. You would have been the Dick Vitale of baseball.
That's right. You are Dickie V.
You would have been amazing, and you're not on the air. Why not?
Well, as I said, I come to the ballpark when I sit down. You know, the worst story is I was in Pittsburgh and sitting behind home plate. And a man was behind me. I don't know who he was. Some of the Cub people were there. The Cubs were playing the Pirates. And some guy said something about old. And I just turned and looked at him. I said, but then look back. I said, you talking to me? And all of a sudden, the guy went on. And then that's when I got into the story about looking at third base. Or he shouldn't be playing left field because he's a DH. It's not his fault. It's your fault for putting him out there. And all of a sudden, the whole place numbed. And when the guy went to get water, I turned around and one of the scouts, I think it was Terry Kennedy was there. And I said, Terry, who the hell was behind me? He goes, Billy, that's our general manager. I said, oh, Jesus. I said, I don't care. He shouldn't be sitting here. He should be sitting in the suite or the box. I said, so, hey, Billy, he came back. We rambled. We chatted. But I'm not going to change my personality. I'm not going to stroke anybody. I'm just not.
That's a good thing.
I want to go back before we get into how the White Sox were built, because in 85, you were here. You pitched 48 games in 85, by the way. You had one of your best years. But around May, you guys were on a road trip, and you looked at your finger, And there was something wrong. I think Vern Plagenhoff brought it up.
My fingers are still green right now. They're still green, but I don't worry about it.
Tell us about it, because that was your World Series ring. Talk about that revelation.
Well, that story started. Before we went on the road trip, I think we went to Anaheim first, then we're going to Seattle. So Pio, who was the trainer at the time, everybody got their rings, and, you know, we're all wearing them. And so Pio goes, well, you know, Bill, that's a little, it looks really tarnished. Let me polish it up. So Pio polished it. Just,
Pio DeSalvo, Tigers trainer.
I said, Pio, don't worry about it. So we proceed to go to the Anaheim, where at that time, the California Angels. And so we all were at a bar. I don't know what bar name it was. Jack was there, and I forget, like four or five of us. And you know how girls know about fake furs and diamonds and all that stuff. Well, this girl looked at me and she goes, you know, your ring is a little different than the other ones. And I'm like protective because I don't know what anything's worth. I said, oh, no, it's the same. So I took it off. She looked at it and she goes, you know, this is different. So that put a question mark in everything else. So now I go into LaJoy was on the road with us. So I went into his room and I said, you know, Bill, I got a question for you. Just tell me the truth. Is my ring different than theirs? And he goes, oh, Bill, we got to win games and everything else. I said, Bill, I know we got to win games. I said, just want a fact. I said, what is this? He really didn't answer the question. So we get to Seattle. What's Vern's last name?
Plagenhoff.
Plagenhoff. Well, he was there, and I like Vern. And Uncle Milty was with me. So we were at the Red Robin, and Vern's sitting there, and I started explaining the ring, and Milt's got his eyes open. So now Vern's got a story. He goes, oh, my God. He goes, listen, I'll pay for the appraisal. Let's get it appraised. So we go to some jewelers, and he's got, you know, that thing, and he looks at it in his eye. He goes, and he didn't look at the insignias, you know, World Series 1984. He just looked up. He goes, is this a high school ring?
And wait a second. Now, you're with Milty, and Milty had one of the real ones, right? Because Milty was a starter.
I got there. So then, obviously, Vern ran with the story, called Campbell, everything else. Well, the whole team started to run to jewelers, finding out what the appraisal was of everybody's ring. So when it was all said and done with, it was what it was. It didn't change. I guess Campbell came out and said, they gave him a third of a share. We gave him a third of a ring and all that. But, well, years went by. An article came out in USA Today. It wasn't that nice that they gave Bill Shear a real World Series ring. Well, I called the USA. I forget who wrote it. And I said, by the way, if you have that ring, I'll give you a P.O. box. Tear off Bill Shear so you can send that to me. So she retracted it, little small version. They did not give him a real World Series ring. So, you know, time went by, things had passed. I mean, you know, again, when we won the World Series in 05, my dad was dying and I was in the hospital next to him. And he looked at the ring with the White Sox. And he said, that's a really nice ring. I said, yeah, it's a real nice ring. He goes, and he was wearing mine. He goes, yeah, but it's not as good as this one. And I said, what's the fable of the story? He believed because he went to the World Series, regardless of what they gave him, that ring meant more to him than the White Sox ring of 05. So yeah. I guess I don't wear any of my rings, but I look at it in the same kind of principle. It's about value. The value isn't going to take anything away from what I did in 84. It's never going to be. It was a special moment. It's still a special ring in some cases. But the value, hey, listen. When I had money, like when Jerry Reinsdorf said, don't you wish you were playing in this era? I laughed at Jerry. I said, Jerry, I would just blown it anyway. Who cares? So I look at it the same principle. The ring is still valuable to me, you know, and I wear it occasionally when I do take it out of the vaults. But I don't wear any of my rings, any of them.
Do you still talk to any guys from 84? I know the way that their professionalism, the way they treated you, the camaraderie really impressed you at the time. Do you still keep in touch? And if so, with who?
I stay in touch. I stay in touch with Petrie. I call him sporadically. I talk to Lance, because Lance obviously is connected now to, you know, the organization. I talked to Daryl. Oh, Jesus, for a couple hours, you know, Daryl's a guest.
The two of you, nobody would listen.
Yeah, Daryl is always a couple of hours.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, Daryl, you know, he was going on with the Sermon on the Mount about the game, and rightfully so. We all could sit and ramble on. Petrie, you know, Danny's doing the TV. So he was asking questions about the White Sox in some cases, but I stay in contact with most of the guys. I call people out of the blue because it gives me an opportunity to be on the porch, whether it's coffee in the morning or beer at night, and have my cigarette. So I'll talk till my phone runs out for a couple hours.
Hey, how does a guy play on, allegedly, you played on six teams in 1 year and then wind up in the job that you've wound up? You know,
yeah, tell us about 88.
It's kind of an oxymoron, isn't it?
That was probably the end of my career, and that was because I was my own agent. So there really wasn't any real reason for me to have one. I had a couple early, and really the only time you really need one is because arbitration. So I wasn't even the last thing I was trying to think of arbitration. I should just get back to the big leagues. So I started with the Orioles in spring training in Miami. And obviously we know the story of that. We lost 21 straight, and I lost the 20th, but I used to laugh. I said, I'm not taking the fall on all 21 of these losses. I lost the 20th. So I was playing for Johnny Oates in Rochester. So then I went to Baltimore, and then they released Scotty McGregor, and they tried to send me down, but I could refuse to go because they had 3+ years and no options. So I, again, you know, said thanks to Roman Heeman. I got on the phone, made some calls, and then I eventually got a job with the Phoenix Firebirds. So I said, the only thing is I want to drive. So I drove from Buffalo to Phoenix with my fiance at the time, and I stayed. They had a really good pitching staff. They had Brantley and Hoff. I mean, Trevor Wilson and Burkett. I mean, they had a bunch. And we had old veterans in the bullpen with Ronnie Davis, and Jerry Lucas. So I was really like a 10-man pitcher on a 12-man staff. So they were trying to send this guy down. I said, listen, release me. I said, there's no reason. You just got me. Even though Roger was managing the Giants, so I was back to square one. So I was making calls, and eventually I got hooked up with the Phillies. So I was going to Old Orchard Beach. But we were driving, so I went from Phoenix to Nashville, Nashville to Indianapolis, Indianapolis to Buffalo, and then Buffalo back to Portland, Maine. Well, by the time I get there, after pitching briefly, my fiance's driving on the 4th of July weekend back to into Portland. George Culver goes, Billy, you're not supposed to meet the team in Atlanta. I said, he goes, what? You'd be thrilled to go to the Bay. I said, not that. My fiance is driving from Buffalo to, he goes, well, you got two choices. You can fly out of here or fly out of Portland. So I flew out of Portland. She drove to Philadelphia. So I got picked up with the Phillies. And then the first night game at Wrigley, I could see they're taking my uniform out of my bag. I said, well, here we go again. So I remember Alex Trevino goes, call Houston. I said, we need another pitcher. They had Danny Mead, and that was all it. I said, I'm not going to go down. And that's where Culver said, come down. There's no lefties. But I refused. And then when it all came down to it, I was watching the game on TV, and Schiraldi blew out his hammy or groin, and all of a sudden I'm watching. I called Chicago, the Cubs. He goes, are you watching the game? I said, what game? He goes, well, Schiraldi just blew out. I said, oh, that's too bad. He goes, would you consider going to AA? I'm laughing at myself. I said, I've played in the International League, the American League, the PCL, back to the Association, the National League, and now I'm going to play in the Eastern League? I've never said yes. I said, yeah, I'll go. They called me back, said, we got good news. We're going to send you to Des Moines. So I ended up that year in Des Moines. So, and then when they called you in, they asked me if I would consider being a pitching coach. I used to kid because I didn't pitch well there at all. And Pete McCann wanted me to get into pitching coaching. So I said, I just went into the big leagues with two different teams. Now, two teams that weren't very good. But that was the last year I got to the big leagues. But that year, I played in all the AAA and the American League and the National League the same year. I didn't even know what my spikes, because you know, back then they colored them. So I had maroon, I had blue, I had black. I said, Jiminy Christmas. I said, I probably had one pair, but there was more paint on my spikes than were on the ball.
Hey, Bill, this may surprise you to know this, but the Detroit Tigers, the young Tigers, are actually 19-17 this year against every team not named the Chicago White Sox, against whom they are 0-9. The Sox have knocked them out of the race single-handedly. You see the games in 10,000 words or fewer, Bill. Tell us what you like and don't like about the Detroit Tigers.
I think what the Tigers have done, and I give a lot of credit to their manager, I think they're playing with a lot of energy. They're young kids that are trying to look down the road and try to get the opportunity to play, whether it's with the Tigers or others. The one thing you'll not, they're like Kansas City too. They give energy, they give effort. And they're like a lot of the team, and I include Kansas City obviously too, is that the one I was telling the guys in their office, I said, when I saw them last year and we're sitting at a little bar in Cleveland, I said, what's really tough about evaluating this team is you make sure you pick the right ones. You know, I'm not saying you want to lose a utility player or emergency fifth, long start, you know, man, but you don't want to miss out like Fregosi once said, you better know your own organization before you start thinking about others. And so what I'm impressed by them is they've got some young talent. They're building to try to get to whatever that mountain is down the road. But I would say the biggest thing that I get a kick out of more with them is they play with effort. They give their effort. And I think there is some skill there. Now, is everybody skillful? Yeah, I mean, that's human nature. There's going to be ones that are going to be, like I said, utility players, and somebody's going to be everyday player. But through time, I think the Tigers should be very upbeat and positive of what's going on now, especially giving the young kids the chance to see where they plan for the next 2 or 3 years and beyond.
But, Bill, right now our ball club has more suspects than prospects.
Come on. Well, that's true. You know, remember, that does happen. But you know what? After their championship years, they didn't win. That usually happens. Like, we were blessed because what we did is we won, yes, in 05. But what did we do? We traded Sale. We traded Eaton. We traded Quintana. They were contract-friendly. Give Rick Hahn a lot of credit. They were not just rental childs. They were going to be with a club for more than 2 or 3 years. So that's how we got those prospects like Mankata, like Kopech, you know, from Boston. And one of the better trades that we came out were really was the Chicago Cub one for Quintana when we got Eloy Jimenez and Dylan Cease. Now, we definitely quit, no question about the one in with Eaton. I remember Buddy Bell would say when we were in the suite, he had a list of teams that were interested in all these guys. And one of the guys that had more interest by clubs was Adam Eaton. And Buddy wasn't saying anything mean. He just says, he's a nice player, but he's getting more, you know, there might be 14 teams that were interested. One had 11, another was 10. So what did we get out of that? We got Lopez. We got Dunning. We got Giolito. I mean, so think about it. All those trades happened because you had to look and get into the room and say, we've got to make changes. We got to get players. And we had the players to make trades, and they were locked in by contract to get ourselves these kind of prospects down the road to be successful, besides the drafted players, besides the guys you may sign in free agency or sign free agent players like, say, Grundell types or Keuchel. I mean, that's how this team – but this team from the 05 team was like when I was with the Marlins. It was win and out. This team has got a chance to be around for a period of time, which for the fans of Chicago, including us that work for the White Sox, it's very positive. Very positive.
Really is.
Well, Billy, thanks for joining us. Great story there. In fact, we didn't even mention the fact that you earmarked James McCann, which is a great acquisition, although they've kind of replaced him with Austin Romine now, but that was a very savvy one on your part, too. Congratulations on all of it. We'll see if the White Sox can go all the way this year. Since the Tigers are out, that would be something worthwhile for our division. And great catching up with you, man. Good talking to you again.
Thanks, Bill.
I hope to see you guys down the road somewhere. And remember, the word of the street, go Bills.
Hey, Bill, go Bills. Bill, there's one other. Bill
they beat my Jets yesterday. Yeah, I didn't like that, Billy.
Bill,
yeah,
Bill,
sure.
There's one thing I want to tell you. You have just set a new record for the most words in a 30-minute
He's good.
562,000 words.
I didn't even have my first Budweiser. Now, goodbye, boys. Take care of yourself.
Yeah, you had a better pro career than Vital, too. Thanks, Billy. We'll talk to you soon.
Goodbye, boys. Okay. Goodbye. Bye-bye. See you later. Bye-bye.
Hi, Billy. Have a great day, Billy. Thank you.
Oh. It is funny, but you know what? I almost committed a terrible error here. I almost asked him to tell us one more good story, but I know he would have gone on for an hour, so I'm going to tell it real quickly. In 94, the Toronto Sun awarded Bill Shearer its annual Scout of the Year award for going above and beyond the call of duty as he pitched batting practice to a prospect in upstate New York in the rain. While wearing white dress shoes, the batter lined a pitch right back at Billy that knocked him down into the mud. Walking off the field to a standing ovation from the other scouts in attendance, Shearer said, quote, "It reminded me of the old days. I'd come in the game, guys in the other dugout would stand and cheer," end quote.
That's great stuff. Hey, thanks for listening, everybody. We will see you again on Thursday for another edition.
No, you won't. You're not going to be here Thursday.
Not going to be. Fred Heumann's going to fill in for me on Thursday, but they'll all see you at that particular time. So have a great week, everybody.
Thanks.